Welcome back to Upstanding Par Fitness Radio. My name is Brian Devins. I'm here with Tom Davis, Kevin Conley, Scott Nelson, and Terry Nelson on the phone line. I feel like we're in a radio station. Hey. I feel like every time I do this with a bigger group of people, I kind of take something away from it too. So, and I know this one specifically is going to be based on our experiences as coaches and what we've kind of experienced, or prescribed for people to overcome the lack of progress or maybe even a plateau. So obviously I'll have a broad range of clients, and I think that this is going to be a pretty unique discussion. So I know that this all started from a conversation between Terry and Tom, if I remember properly. So I'm going to let you guys take it away, and I want you guys to get it off your chest. What's bugging you?
I'm excited.
Go ahead, Terry.
There's nothing bugging anybody, but it's good conversation.
I like to bounce ideas off of Tom. I pick on him all the time, and I just message him, and I like to get his input on things because I feel like we have different points of view, and that makes conversations with Tom interesting for me. But basically, we were talking about people that don't necessarily have a ton of training intensity and how you kind of have to tweak their programs to, elicit the sort of output that you need for them to really progress. And that's why I kind of took the mental health psychological aspect of this away to look at the research, because Tom and I were trying to figure out, how do you get someone to past a plateau when maybe they are struggling with, RPE or enjoying what they're doing or what have you.
Yeah, that's a good point. Would you say it's more of a psychological battle in terms of like training, or are you saying stuff that goes on outside of the gym?
Could be either or. For the purposes of this podcast, I looked at what would impact somebody's ability to push to like a 9 or a 10 RPE. There's some great studies out there. It turns out that there's actually a lot of data about why people work at the RPEs that they do from a psychological perspective.
Yeah, I know there was a recent one come out not too long ago in terms of understanding. I think there was a gender differences too between gauging RPEs of 7 and RPEs of 10. And obviously 7 was actually a little bit more challenging for people to gauge than they were 10. And I think it was more in trained individuals than they were newbies. And I think even newbies, getting them to push themselves beyond a discomfort level. I wouldn't say newbies in terms of they don't know how to do the exercise properly. They're doing the exercise properly, but they don't know how to push themselves. Because I actually brought this up before, and I've made notes to certain individuals when I look at spreadsheets and I see every single week they're hitting the top end of a rep range. So if we give a range of 8 to 12, they're 12, 12, 12. The numbers might be progressing, but we're progressing pretty quickly over a week's time, more than the standard like 5% increase in force or in load. But it's always baffling. So what we're doing the last few weeks, and we talk about like understanding like external versus internal measures of volume. Whereas as coaches, if we were to go by 60% of your one rep max, that's an external measurement. It's not necessarily an internal measurement. If someone's work capacity is higher, we should know that if we're coming within 1 to 2 reps of failure, that's the true measurement of training volume or relative to the person.
And where it gets kind of tricky, I'm glad that you brought up RPE 7 versus 10, because that's the study I wanted to reference today.
Exactly.
And what they found in this study is that more isn't necessarily better when it comes to consistency. And I think this was kind of the conversation Tom and I were having. So for elite athletes like Tom or Mike, they're able to push themselves those RPEs and they enjoy it. And where we run into trouble is, as this study showed, though, when they actually have people engage in exercise and then they have them rate how much they enjoyed doing the workout, the people who worked out in an RPE 7 said that they enjoyed it, they would do it again, it was a good experience for them, versus the people who were working at an RPE of 10 didn't have as much enjoyment. So from a consistency longevity perspective, although we could probably get more results training to a 9 or a 10, if having them train at a 7 is what's going to keep them consistently active and engaging in those healthy behaviors, it kind of makes you wonder, is the RPE 7 so bad?
Not necessarily. And I think I think you made a good point saying the longevity here is what's key. And I think for example, when I write a program for somebody I know that's new to the gym, they're not going 5 days a week. They're not hitting legs twice a week. I want to make sure I ease them in because I want that process to be enjoyable. The volume might even be significantly lower than what a standard, starting dose of volume would be for a given muscle group. Because listen, the first time you experience DOMS, it's kind of hard to want to go back. I always reference the guy that walks on coals. Like he didn't walk across 100 yards the first day he did it. 'Cause he probably wouldn't come back.
No.
You know?
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely a good point there. That's but at what point, I guess the question is, do we continue to stay at an RP7 if the goals begin to change? So when is that conversation to be had? Like if you enjoy training at an RP7, now you've made this, you formed a habit or a routine of going to the gym, but now you're seeking more changes in your physique. I think that's kind of the question you got to have. Okay, now we might need to push yourself a little bit harder, but how do you get that person to do that? At that point, have they developed the love for pushing their bodies to a little bit more, a limit closer to failure? I think for the most part, a lot of people do.
Yeah.
Do tend to enjoy that process.
For sure. I agree. I think that's definitely a conversation to have with clients. I mean, I see a lot of this because I do have a lot of beginners. I work with a lot of beginners who haven't stepped foot in the gym in, a few years or at all. And that RPE of 7 is absolutely going to make them adhere a little bit better. I mean, it's comfortable. You feel the muscles working. You get a good pump. You kind of feel that you can walk the next day. It's enjoyable. It's an enjoyable RPE. But then there gets to a point where I think it even happens organically where we don't even have to have the conversation of, we have to keep pushing forward. I think naturally they just want to do better. I mean, one of my clients today, Alicia, shout her out. She's awesome. She has never bench pressed a day in her life. And when I tried to put her on the dumbbells, it was really shaky. So I was like, all right, let's start barbell. Let's work our way up. We just hit the Benjamin today. We hit 100 pounds. And for I think that's the first milestone for especially beginners, the three digits.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
So we hit the 100 and we tried it a few weeks ago, didn't get it. Then we went a few weeks of doing just some good accessory work, pushing ourselves. And she just kept on wanting to. She wanted to go heavier. And it happened organically to the point where she's comfortable with being uncomfortable now. And we started that comfortable 7 RPE, but I think that for longevity, for example, taking the study out of it, it happens organically where most people that come in here are competitors a little bit by nature, whether it's stage, meet, whatever, but they're competing against themselves and they're doing this to better themselves. So I think that RPE will raise organically. And I think they will get themselves into a 9-10 RPE. I think the issue is when that doesn't happen organically. What do we do as coaches, right?
I think organically what happened is going back to exertion load, being able to exert yourself a little bit more. Although it still might be a 7 RPE, maybe the load is a little bit more than it was, 4 weeks from the from start. Yeah. Obviously, that you'd hope that there was some type of progression happening there. Yeah. And I can tell you from experience, I've had clients who are experienced weightlifters that have more than 5 years under their belt that don't train to our 10 RP. Mm-hmm. The only way I can get them to do is if I can kind of sprinkle in a couple AMRAPs here and there.
Yeah.
But it depends on the AMRAP. It depends on the machine. I can't have them do a realistic AMRAP for back squats or AMRAP with barbell bench press. Now, I don't generally add those in anyways just because I didn't have a spotter or think something was going on, or if they had a spotter and they let them die under the bar. I've seen people that you got this. And they're literally one arm's up in the air and the other one's crushed and their rotator cuff's ripped. So
I saw a meme.
I kind of avoid those.
Such a good point. That was another study that I found. So it turns out they did a little study and it was a twofold study. But for this conversation, one thing that they did was, they found people can work at a higher RPE simply when they're given verbal praise.
Yes.
So they have them attempt to achieve, a one rep max when they're just by themselves. Then they have some random hype man come in there and be like, oh, you're fucking killing it. And all of a sudden the weight goes up. So this, and I know it sounds goofy, but it's a real study they did. And the other part of it was they found that when they tell people, we have given you steroids, we put them in your drink, you have a performance boosting substance in your system now, people were able to go harder just by that placebo effect of believing that they had been given that.
Are you referencing the Dianabol study?
This was Carlino, Benedetti, and Paolo.
Yeah, there was a study there. Did like they gave subject some of the participants, they gave 5 milligrams or 25 milligrams of Dianabol, and then the other ones, they said they were giving it to them as a placebo drug. The placebo group actually had like a 20% increase in strength gains compared to the ones with that were on they're using actual steroids.
It was
incredible. I mean, obviously we knew placebo was a real thing, and I think the duration of the test was pretty low. I think it was like two weeks, something like that. But it was interesting to see that just a little switch can make you train a lot harder.
You know, it's crazy too. You know, that placebo, I've said for years that there's no such thing as a placebo. Sure. Biochemically.
Have you ever taken creatine before, Kevin? Because let me just tell you about creatine.
No, I don't mess around with this stuff. but so like the placebo effect, if it does something, whether it's biochemical or not, you know, it could be doing nothing for you chemically in terms of your physiology or whatever. But if you have the idea that it's doing something and it pushes you harder, then it's not a placebo. It works, right? I have like a spotting technique that I use as a placebo all the time. I'll put my hands literally right under the bar on a bench press, not touch it, literally just like have it right under. And people are like, did you touch it? No, dude, that was, and like, again, I saw this meme when I said, like, when somebody says, all you, bro, it, in fact, was not all you.
If you're gripping the bar. Although you have a strong bicep curl, so if you were trying to curl it up, I'd be pissed. All right?
I might do that a few times. But, I'll just literally have my hand right under the bar. To them, it looks like I'm helping them, but I'm not. It's literally like a placebo effect in spotting techniques. So, like, as trainers, it's kind of cool because we can do those little white lies or those little techniques to help our clients. And I do it as well with not telling them the weight that's on the bar. Well, how much weight is it? Don't worry about it. Lift it. That's a placebo within itself. So I like that study that you referenced because it's huge.
Yeah.
Well, it speaks to the power of the mind because that's the only factor that changed is what these people believe. So whether they believe they're doing a great job or whether they believe that they've ingested these substances, they all of a sudden they're performing better now. So going back to the first study, you know, they're enjoying themselves at a RPE 7 versus a 10. Mm-hmm. You know, then the challenge to me really becomes to get someone from like an RPE 7 to an 8, getting them to enjoy that feeling of exertion.
Yeah.
That can come into play too, Tara. I mean, we can take this way out of just a supplement. We can add it. Okay, mindset's obviously critical. Is just implementing the right goal. Because how many people have you seen, like, okay, they slack off, and let's just use as a context. Maybe Tom, you could probably step in on this one too. People who are training for the powerlifting meet versus them on the off season. The person training for the bodybuilding prep versus them on the off season. As soon as they are in prep, this nothing changed. You still have a training protocol. For sure. You still have a nutritional protocol here too. But when you are physically, you say to your peers, "I'm in prep." The light switch kind of flips.
You got to hold yourself accountable now.
Yeah, and the mindset changes for most people. I mean, the mindset should be changed because it should be ready to turn that corner. But
not only now are you training for a goal, but you've publicly announced.
Yeah,
that you've also put yourself on it
through for sure. Yeah.
When you
stories delete after 24 hours, just to let you know. But it's huge.
The real work though is like for some people, it's very easy as a coach to message it to them as, all right, we're going to increase the intensity. This is going to be so great for you. You know, it can be easy to message it to some people, but then you've got other people, not going to name any names, who like to just show up and look cute in their newest pair of leggings, and they don't really get jazzed up to work at a higher RPE. And that's what Tom and I were talking about. You know, you got to have them doing all sets of 20 and AMRAP and everything else just to get them
I want to touch on that too, because we're living in an era that's a lot different than if you were, I'm not going to age myself, but it's either way. I feel like when I grew up watching like lifters, it was like guys push themselves to the absolute max. And that's what allowed me. And as a kid, when I first got into lifting, it wasn't about getting as much muscle as possible, as much as it was a way to cope with just stress as a 16-year-old kid. Mm-hmm. Like that for me was a great outlet for me as far as dealing with stress. Now with like social media, TikTok, Instagram, whatever, Snapchat, I feel like everywhere you turn, you're getting, you know, fed these, do these glute kickbacks with this type of shoe because it's a slightly heavier shoe and you can get great glutes like this one. And then you're doing these things, and really, it's the outfit. Honestly, yeah. I mean, there's the clothes are fantastic. My wife wears them. I love it. But I'm just saying, like, it can make everything, it all the difference. And obviously, when you see something, you have that emotional response that you want to, you know, kind of replicate that.
Yeah. Terry actually commented on my post the story of the pine cones. You live to 100, you got to start just messing with people. Say you ate pine cones every day. And I said, this is what people do, but with health and fitness. Stop the bullshit. Like, it's most of the stuff I think I see on Instagram, social media, anything like that, it's a selling point.
If you're 100 years old on fixed income, though, and you're getting like 20% return on pine cones, I mean, I think I'd. No, but I understand. It's unfortunate, you know, the lack of. And not even the people are trying to dupe people. They might even legitimately think that they were taking this thing, you know, that got them there, you know. And forget the core value of health and wellness is consistency.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to say, you know, blame it on a supplement or whatever. So I understand this is a dichotomy to it, but.
Do we need to, like, backtrack and explore why you were so stressed out at the age of 16? I'm so stuck there.
You're an angry child.
Yo, listen, don't bring up too much on this, because I feel like some photos would emerge, and I just...
Okay. I heard you were in a metal band or something.
I was in a metal band. Okay, may have had dreadlocks.
Yeah, the dreadlocks. I heard that.
I think Tom has seen him. He doesn't have any
photos.
Matt told me about him. I need those.
They're going to, like, edit it like dreadlocks in now.
I never
Buffalo Soldier.
Were you listening?
I had a good time.
Yeah, this morning or something.
I was definitely listening to Bob Marley. Yeah, today was a Bob Marley day. Just kind of stumbled upon it and
took you back to your roots.
I won't comment any further. I feel like these photos are going to emerge now. I swear to God.
Oh, absolutely.
I need to see these.
No, Terry, you don't. Yeah. Okay, maybe.
Talk to Alyssa.
Okay, maybe. Maybe for your birthday. Like, happy birthday. You can see these.
Oh, I'm jealous. Yeah. Obviously, I have not had the chance to get dreadlocks ever in my life. Conleys are not blessed with hair. Scott knows what I'm talking about.
You guys have great heads, though.
We do. We have.
If I was bald, forget about it.
We got good bald guy heads.
Yeah. Like, my barber legitimately cuts my hair to make it look like a normal shaped head. Mm. So,
yeah.
That's it.
Hey. That's all right.
where Tom and I kind of landed, though, was talking about, you know, these people that really just can't muster up, I don't know if it's the self-confidence or the energy or whatever, to push themselves past those lower RPEs, you know, how we as coaches, like, our responsibility is to get them to that destination that they said they wanted to go to.
Right.
So then it's a matter of adjusting volumes and changing cardio and, you know, probably dialing down macros a little bit to get them that progress without, you know, the output ideally we would like to see. So I would love to know from, like, Scott and Kevin and Brian, because Tom and I already exchanged opinions on it. What do you guys do with the clients that you work with to get them results in absence of work ethic, basically?
Well, I saw Scott pushing, had his client Mark pushing a sled. I just want to have him touch on that because I don't feel like he wasn't doing that when you guys first started together.
The portion when you first walked in, or the part where he maxed out the bar with the plates. So he was pushing over 500 with ease.
Phenomenal.
Sets back and forth just because he wanted to try it out.
Hey.
Because he's willing to push his limits now.
That's cool, that's man. Good. No, that's cool that, like you said, that, like, he wants to do that. Like, that's a strenuous-ass workout. And, you know, obviously I think your guys' time together really, like, pushed him to that that part where he wants to do that. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, he showed a little bit of interest in some activities that are in our red room, and just put up a little bit of a program. We've modified it here and there to more things that he enjoys, just different things that we've discovered working together. And
I've seen you in there, man.
Push himself time and time again, and
Like, I'm in there, like, when you guys are usually in there.
Sled to get over 5, I think it was 5:35 he was pushing, no problem.
Yeah, just stand on it, bud. I think I saw you doing that.
We've done that where he pulls me, yes. He's like, I need more weight, and I just jump on it.
Dude, it's phenomenal. I see you in there.
It's not a whole lot of weight, but.
I see you in there with him on Saturdays, and, he's rocking it, man. Kudos to him and you.
Well, he's doing what he likes to do, right, Scott? Like, that's what he enjoys doing, right?
He may not have known that beforehand, but he does now that he enjoys it.
Yeah, for sure.
Because that is, when we meet, that is the workout that we do together. He does work out, depending on his program, multiple times during the week. But when we meet on a Saturday, it's always that program together. And I enjoy it, so I hope he does too. He's showing that he enjoys it.
That's awesome.
The real question is, what do you do when the client doesn't necessarily enjoy it?
That's where a good coach comes into play. Yeah. Kev, have you ever experienced anybody that just, like, would not push themselves?
1,000 times a week.
His clients are not listening to this?
No, I'm kidding. With myself.
Okay. All right.
No, I mean, I have a large spectrum of clients. I have, you know, a lot of beginners. Going off the RPE, I mean, even getting to RPE is kind of not a chore, but what's a 1 to 10, I mean, for a beginner that's never stepped in foot in the gym? I mean,
you're going down a rabbit hole now.
Oh yeah, for sure. And like, I'm going to try to keep it like fairly condensed, but you know, what's a 1 to 10 for a beginner? So I even start off with easy, medium, hard. What is it? Are you challenging yourself? Is it hard to the point where that last rep was impossible? If I do a rep range, right? It's a green zone. Right, we've talked a lot about zones in New York. I think it's like rubbing off on me. And
don't say yellow or red. We're good.
Yeah. So, anyways, I use a green zone. Like, yo, I tell people all the time because I see people pushing themselves to like, what if it's 8 to 12, pushing themselves to 12 at all costs. And I go, look, like, we need to keep our form in check. Think of it as a zone. You know, 8's not bad. 12 is good. Don't get me wrong. The only bad set that you can have is. Say this line probably 1,000 times a week is the only bad set you can have is if it's within good form, of course. You know, I hate this exercise. I know my rep range is 8 to 12, but I'm going to stop at 8 because I hate Kevin. I hate his stupid face and I hate that he makes me do this workout. And if you stop at 8 and you could get to 12, yeah, okay, that's when I'm going to like break your balls about it. But if you're pushing yourself, especially beginner, at that 7 RPE, right? I know they're at a 7, but they don't. Over the weeks, easy, medium, hard. Then we go into 7 RPE, 8 RPE, 9 RPE. Then we go into AMRAPs and so on and so forth. I mean, for me, the way I train, especially beginners, is I always start them off at a 6 to 7 RPE and I gradually increase it. I mean, most of the time, like you said, Terry, we want to look for longevity in the gym. We want to look for that like enjoyable experience in the gym. If I got a ER nurse that's got to be on her feet for 12 hours, I'm not going to put her through a grueling leg day on her first week into the gym. It's just, I've seen these pictures or these posts saying that any trainer can make you sore, but like it's the trainer that's going to push you toward your goals with your health in mind that is really going to push you to the next level. And I think, Terry, you can agree, is that it's not just about physical health, it's mental health. If the gym is becoming grueling and it's not enjoyable anymore, you know, I don't think, you know, pushing them at a 10 right away is going to be the best. And in order to push them to 10, it's a lot about getting to know the client, knowing if they got anything going on. Like that, when that thyroid acts up, I got a few clients with thyroid issues, you know, like intensity and fatigue acts a little differently. But knowing the client, knowing when to push. You know, I said it to a client today, these masks really make it hard to see facial expressions. So I've been like really, you know, before you could see the grueling face, like I hate you face.
What do you look for, tears now or?
I look for tears.
middle fingers?
Yeah,
middle fingers.
Yeah. Well, sign language always works.
I also look for the burning hatred in their eyes towards me. That usually is a good indicator.
That's good. It's good you mentioned that because I know, so speaking from primarily doing a lot of in-person services it's been, you have the advantage of being able to push somebody and say, hey, give them cues.
So much easier.
It is. Yeah. And I would agree. So from an online training perspective, I feel like I set up the framework for everyone's starting protocol pretty much very similarly. So like if I have a newbie versus even someone that's getting ready for a contest, it's the same idea of one, make sure this is an enjoyable training protocol. Okay. Something that they are used to doing, something they're knowledgeable on, or give them the tools or resources that they are knowledgeable on, but also starting off on a lower RP, making sure they're not sore to the point where they don't want to come back for week two.
Yeah.
But also because trying to relate back to the time that I started out again, like I was weightlifting, I took time off and I had to start a cut, and my work capacity was in the dumpster. So anyone that doesn't know what work capacity is, that's basically the amount of reps that you can do every set. So for example, someone with really good work capacity would be able to do an RP of 8 or 9, four sets of 12, 12, 11, 11. It would go something like a sequence like that. Whereas when I first started out, I remember specifically doing a set of 8 and then a set of 6.
Yeah.
And then a set of 4, walking around the gym, pondering what is wrong with me. And then being in the, you know, pull a couple more down. But again, poor work capacity. So that right there was just, was discouraging. Yeah. It was discouraging. So understanding that, one, because they may be able, they might be stronger than they, you know, than they are in week one or two, but being able to kind of move up gradually and in increase RPs, I think is something we kind of all agree on, and just not crushing someone the first week for numerous reasons. One, because they're going to get a lot more gain out of that. Again, muscle, like if you have somebody taking time off or has experience or had experience, it may take them 4 to 6 weeks just to kind of get back to feeling normal. It may not be as strong as they were, but they'll eventually get there. And the same thing for a new person. I mean, going in there, they might not know what RPE is yet. But if you tell them, hey, listen, like leave 5 reps in a tank, just go to the point where you feel a pump. Even if that pump is at, you know, 6 reps, stop it. You know, even if you're short.
Agree 100%. But what Tom and I specifically were discussing are, you know, clients who have been on, you know, my roster for several months that are still, you know, they can't seem to, you know, I mean, everybody needs to start off easy in the beginning. I think we all agree on that. It's figuring out how do you flip that switch in someone's brain that makes, you know, utilizing their full work capacity appealing to them.
So for like,
so the other study so that I...
That was my next point, because I do have quite a few people now that I've been working with, 1 to, you know, up to 4 years. So getting, you know, shaking things up a little bit, I always tell them, like, we're going to, you know, clean out the cobwebs because they're starting to get a little stale, especially if someone that's going long term. Their focus isn't even fat loss as much as just, I want to progress more in the gym. And if they've been training for 5+ years, guess what? If we're gaining a few pounds here and there, you have to be very open to changing up the program. Now, if you can only dedicate yourself 3 days a week, half an hour of training, guess what? You're limited. You're extremely limited. But for the clients that have, you know, enough time to dedicate to that are in that 5 year or more experienced lifters, just being able to strategize your frequency and your volume, frequency and intensity throughout the week. And maybe even not just a week. Now you're looking to more like microcycles and building out maybe 12 weeks of programming rather than just doing the, here's 1 week of generalized hypertrophy training. You're doing, okay, three weeks with like an overreaching week at week three, and then doing a taper week if needed, and then progressing from there. And then maybe even adding in certain things like, hey, I think you should be up here as far as your weights go. Weight suggestion, weight range suggestions. There's a lot of things. Tempo reps. Depending on the person, too. Again, we go back to the person that enjoys being in RPE 7 versus the person that loves to push themselves to the brink of exhaustion. I think that those two clients can be handled similarly. Obviously, you've got to be very unique with your approach. But the only difference is, okay, rep ranges. If I have someone who wants to work in an RPE of 7, they're generally going to work on the higher rep range. And if it's a female client, I'm going to be more open to doing that than if it would be a male, and only based on the muscle differences between more type 1 fibers in females and them being able to get away with those higher rep ranges and more volume per se.
Yeah. So like in terms of like advanced clients or intermediate, pushing them at like online is a lot different for me. Because I do a lot of stuff in person, right? I'm there. I can kick your ass, right? I can say, all right, let's do this, let's do this. I can add drop sets. I can do whatever it may be. If I think you're a dragon ass, guess what? You're doing a double drop set on your last set. You're doing, let's go into the red room and do some battle ropes or something like that, right? But online, right, I'll look over their program. If they're going towards that higher end of the rep range, all right, guess what? Next week, I'm programming your weights. Let's see how you do, yeah. Right? If you go like a leg press, for example, 200, 12 reps at 200, 12 reps at 300, 12 reps at 400, and then 12 reps at 500, and I have you at for four sets, 200 and 300 is a warm-up set, bro. Let's bump this up.
Have you considered like having them record or film their top working sets?
Oh, for sure. You know, I can really.
That's been a game changer.
It has.
record your top working set. The first we're like, I didn't have my phone with me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's see how this.
But it's fun to see those
for sure. So like I'll program weights. I don't know if you guys do the same thing.
Seldom, but I mean it's happened. Yeah. Like I'm not even program the weights. I think Tom would probably be able to touch on programming weights, like peaking for like powerlifting and stuff like that.
Yeah,
but,
for sure.
But for me, I'll give them like a range of weights and hopefully, I mean, within reason, if they're under recover from the week prior training, depending where they're at in their block, and they have to, you know, it's relative strength too. So the RP is also important. But again, going back to being able to film these and seeing where they're actually at in terms of what it looks like, what the set looks like. And sometimes for them to see it, yeah. Maybe more of like, oh, wow, I think I had a little bit more in me. I cut them short, so.
For sure. Tom, do you, like, you basically, like, do you program weights for your powerlifting people, or do you, like, for your strength guys, do you say you're mainly percentages, or?
I only use percentages during peaking and power phases.
Gotcha.
And even, it depends on the client. During power phases, if the client is more advanced and they know what they're doing and they can push themselves and I know they can push themselves, I'll leave it at a more RPE based.
Yeah.
But definitely during a peaking phase, it's all percentage based.
Gotcha. Yeah. So, I mean, they're kind of like, I would say stuck to that way, right? They yeah. have to do it. And
well,
that's
a lot of that percentage, like the percentage comes from a number they told me they wanted. So
for sure. Yeah.
If they go off, then it's like, why did you go off? And were you a little overzealous or was it just a bad day for you? And
yeah.
We got to start looking internally at that.
For sure. And I've firsthand seen clients have bad days, like just like working in person. So that next session, it's like we're trying to, I get a lot of clients that are very, they get a little disappointed when they have a bad session, because beginners like to go like, and they just love to see the progress, right? They progress, which is awesome, right? I mean, I'm not gonna tell them no, don't progress, but when they have that dip, right, we've always said that training is not a linear line. It's up down, right? Embrace the suck, yeah. Right, because it's just gonna that's what it's gonna be. So that next session I come in with them, it's like, all right, let's try to figure out if they're still in the ruts of that, you know, even if they have a training program, it's like, all right, let's have a kind of like what I call a feel good day. Like, let's get a good pump and like, let's do something that we haven't done before. Or even like, for example, like Alicia, like that hit the 100, like we didn't really have that plan today, but I was like, you know what? Let's have a feel good day. Let's have an accomplishment, a PR. Right. Yeah. Because I totally believe that she could do it after, especially after like first three sets. Like we were warmed up on the bench press, like, you know, pretty, I don't know, you know, my warm ups for everything. We did like eight reps, but those eight reps looked super good. And for the last few weeks, like her form was perfect. So I was, after those like first two to three sets, I was like, this is the day. Like this is a this is going to be that, like, you know, and I think
level Benjamin.
Yeah, I think that like
I liked. I'm gonna use that from now on.
Yeah, the Benjamin baby. and I think that more necessarily, sometimes we do have to go down on clients and be like, dude, what are you doing? Like, why are you dicking around in here, right? But like sometimes I feel like we just need to like maybe do like some positive reinforcement and say, hey, look at this, like you hit the 100, right? And that was a huge, milestone. And for a day like that, like, I think something in terms of like the mentality really shifts them into gear even more. Like, Cal is killing it. Right. From the last time we talked, right? And like, I feel like if he had a bad day, if that next session he comes in and he smokes something, right? Like, I've seen it with Brad as well. Like, Brad's gotten like fairly strong over the last year that I've worked with him. Once he has that good day, he's like overdrive. He is like ready to go. I know, like, powerlifting, like, you definitely have to stay within like some certain, I guess, like a range so you don't overwork, right?
Right.
But I feel like when they have that good day, that good feeling day, Mark probably feels the same way when he was running with 500 on the sled. I feel like those good days, as a coach, you can program that and you can say, hey, do this. And
well, yeah, anything that's going to boost morale is going to, I mean, yeah. Anything like that. And even like from an online standpoint, obviously, making sure, like, I make sure I celebrate some of these training, like these training victories, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. whether they send videos in and whatnot. Obviously, if there's a critique to be made, I will. But if it's minute, I'm not going to nitpick it. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like as a coach, yes, you're there to make sure they're improving in their performance. But some people, and I've experienced this as a coach, just kind of trying to give them the best advice, is nitpicking a little too much. And guess what? Doesn't always work out in favor. So, you know, leaving it alone a little bit and just say, hey, listen, that was minute. It's nothing to be too concerned for sure. about. And make sure you celebrate those things is huge. Like watching people progress in a 4-week period, like significantly after making some training changes or whatever, it's a good feeling. It's a good feeling as a client, but it's also a good feeling as a coach. Like, oh, all right, good. This is paying off. This is
still got it.
I think this is like feel good for everybody right now.
Still got it.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And I love that, like, you know, you do have to differentiate between the in-person services and the online. So for Brian and I working online, you know, we have to rely on those videos. And yes, I do program weight selection in some cases. But what I was bouncing off of Tom and the approach I've been taking lately is the last and final study I'm going to reference today, which is when people are reminded to maximize their pleasure during exercise, they report a higher mood state and they showed sustained consistency over a 6-month period. So I've been kind of tying like pleasure into the workout and saying, you know, oh, well, you did good at your RPE 7. Imagine how much better it's going to feel if you try an RPE 8, how proud you're going to be or whatever. And I feel like as online coaches, that's one of the biggest tools that we have that we can use is getting people to make that connection between exercise and pleasure to, you know, boost adherence and hopefully get them to work at those higher RPEs. Not in every case, but.
Yeah, 100%. And I think seldom do we have people that are working with us on the longer term that don't, you know, find it more enjoyable than they did the first week that they were on. So I think it kind of happens innately for a lot of people, especially when they get into this, because they're seeing changes happen, not even like physically, just the emotional changes they've had. Maybe they're going to a party and they're able to enjoy themselves without feeling like crap when they leave. And I think for a lot of people, like just making notes is I was able to do this. I wasn't guilty after. I didn't have that sense of overwhelming sense of guilt where I screwed up my week or I screwed up my day. They're leaving the gym. Their vitality, you know, it's through the roof. It's compared to where it was. Even if they just walk up a set of stairs and they're feeling less winded. I mean, that's just a huge improvement. Go ahead, Terry.
I think what people forget, like, you are engaging with a coach and you are doing this to maximize your enjoyment in life. That is literally the purpose. That is the service we provide. So if you're working at an RPE 10 or a 7, I don't care what RPE you're working at with, you should be enjoying yourself. And ideally, you should be able to enjoy pushing yourself harder. But I see a lot of people, you know, using exercise to punish themselves. And really, that's not our objective at all.
Yeah. I see that. I see that a lot, especially in person. I mean, I've done it myself. It's like, oh, shit, I had a lot of peace and wings last night. I got to go into the gym and work some of this off. But I don't really think that way anymore. And I really like what you said about the, you know, improving quality of life. I mean, that's the main goal, right? I mean, improving quality of life, whether you take enjoyment in changing your physique or you're getting stronger or you're just doing it for general wealth and health and wellness, that's actually where we're at now. we need wealth and it's hell. But if you try to, you know, consistently punish yourself, and I have this one client who has been doing awesome, right? And she came to me first, and she had that, like, kind of like that mentality of, like, you know, I haven't done much in a long time. She had this issue with her neck, and we've been working together for about, I don't know, 6 weeks now. And last week, proud trainer moment. I'm going to gas myself up a little bit.
Go ahead.
But she came, like, during our session, she goes, oh, my God, Kev, I forgot to tell you. She goes, yesterday was the first time in a year and a half that I woke up without pain in my neck.
Nice.
And I'm like, nice. Yes! I'm like, it works!
Dude, yes.
Still got it, right? Yeah. So, you know, in terms of that, like, you know, whether you're coming back from an injury, you're doing just general health, or you're getting stronger, you're getting bigger or slimmer or whatever it may be, think about why you're doing it. You're doing it for yourself, and you're doing it to improve yourself and improve your quality of life. I mean, at the end of the day, that's, if you're not enjoying it, like I said, like,
so you're 100% right, dude. You're 100% right. When you're building the foundation of a program, the foundation needs to lay on something that's going to be able to sustain.
Yeah.
Like, obviously we get a lot of people like, I want to get lean and lose body fat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's like straw sticks, man. It really is. It's not the foundation of it. One, the enjoyment process, because if you do not like training and you do not like nourishing yourself with the proper foods, getting lean and shredded is going to suck because you're not going to enjoy any of this. So yeah, the process has to be laying on a bed of enjoyment, man. It has to, and it's got to stay like that. Like I didn't enjoy it when I first started, like putting myself through, it was challenging. Like I remember doing incline walking. I think that's my starting with cardio. Right. Dude, I hated it.
Mm-hmm.
I hated every minute of it. But I did it. I knew I had to hold myself accountable to it. Now, I also understand there are times where I could have easily just passed on it. And I know that not everyone thinks or thrives the same way as I do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just from having client experiences. Like, there's a lot of people who say, you know, it's uncomfortable. I'm good. I'm not going to do that. So those experiences, man, like, again, if someone doesn't like incline walking on a treadmill, well, find another means, another alternative. You know what I mean? So...
But for our listeners, I think you touched on an amazing point there. So for our listeners, for the people who are taking an interest in this podcast, because this might be something they struggle with, I would really challenge them to dig deep and do that, you know, introspection and think, you know, what is it about pushing myself that I don't like? Do I have concerns about my self-efficacy? Do I not feel like I'm able to rise to the challenge? Do I have a fear of failure? You know, there's just so many things behind that. So I would really encourage people, what is it that's preventing you from taking those steps, you know, to progress? What's holding you back? What makes you not want that?
Yeah. I'd be curious to know some of the responses to that, whether those demotivators are external or more of an internal battle between their self, or what people are going to think of them, or what it might be. I'd be very curious to hear some of that stuff, because I know, weight loss is a huge thing, obviously, and a lot of the people struggle because they're looking, it's an external thing.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it's causing them some kind of issues psychologically, but most of it's coming from being around people and I want to be lean, or they see something and they want to do that. So
it'd be an interesting client topic. I'm sorry.
You're okay.
The specific client that I was speaking to Tom about, who is no longer on my roster, their concern was they didn't want to get too big. So I was asking them to, after several months, mind you, asking them to increase their RPE. And their concern was, well, I don't want to get big. And so, of course, I gave them our usual spiel about hormones, and this is why it's not possible, and working at a greater RPE is going to give you the following benefits. But it basically boiled down to the old, I want to tone up. I don't want to build, pretty much. Yeah.
I actually want to reference something that you said, Tom, is about, in one of your posts, I think, about heavy lifting, that you're actually burning more calories when you lift heavier, right? And it kind of
And not only during the lifting session, but in the muscle repair in the following 36 hours, you are still burning calories.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you do 30 minutes of cardio, you burn calories for 30 minutes and that's it. When you get off the treadmill, you're done.
For sure.
And it's only like an increase off what your baseline would have been for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
It depends on the intensity of your cardio. If you're just doing walking, it's not like very significant.
Mm-hmm.
Even like Hit, like the biggest thing for Hit was Epoch. Remember?
Yeah, what about Epoch, dude? Come on.
You know, there's not a lot of Epoch when it goes to cardio. Like, it's not that big of a deal. And it was actually causing more issues with, you know, interference with training than was anything else. But that was a big point. It's like, if you're going to do cardio excessively, you could have done a lot more, especially for like female client. Was it a female client, Terry, that you're referring to?
Of course.
So if they're doing these higher reps, I like to refer it to, and I guess I can't back this with study other than saying, yeah, I mean, it makes sense going back to muscle fiber types, is that females like that do CrossFit, that do tons and tons of reps.
Mm-hmm.
There's some pretty jacked chicks in there. Not to say that they're not doing weightlift, you know, weightlifting ones aren't the same, but like they can thrive off that type, that style of training. So
but
that's
those
why
girls
it's not,
are also going to failure in a lot of their
right,
stuff.
Right. They're all, yeah, right. If I mean, we're talking elite level training. Yeah. I'm not saying the average Joe that goes to the CrossFit gym and, you know, does the same work as everybody else every week.
No, getting back to what Kevin was getting at here, I think, is in order to get those calorie burning benefits from a heavy lifting session, you actually have to push yourself to failure or very near failure. You're not going to get that same energy expenditure at an RPE 7 all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, like when I kind of program like power moves like that, like, you know, I try to get them after they get their like base phase done and they're getting comfortable with exercise. All right, let's start to add in like a deadlift variation, a squat variation. And then, yeah, maybe their max reps is like 5. And I get them into pushing themselves harder and harder. Like, and that's where we see it. So even if like, I say it all the time, that I want to eradicate the word only, because I hate that word. I only did 5 reps. That's fine, because there's a lot of different goals, right? It's all going back to muscle fiber, like muscle fibers and the muscle, like, and like training styles, right? And like that only 5 reps or only word, I want to take it out of
right. It's English, you did literature. 5 reps today. Next week we'll do 6.
Yeah. Or next day, guess what? Next week we'll only do 3, right?
Well, that goes along with some of those like self-limiting beliefs that people hold about themselves. And I think that's what really, that's my opinion, I think that's what holds people back from trying to achieve those higher RPEs is, you know, self-limiting beliefs. They don't think they can do it. Oh, I only did 5. That's not enough.
I agree. I agree 100% because I see it all the time. And that's why I use that. I don't tell them what weight is on the bar or on the machine. And I see fantastic results with it. They're like, oh my God, I did 300 pounds on the leg press. Yeah, I knew you could. And they can't believe it. So I do agree with that, Terry, 100%.
So I one of the things I like to do, because I actually dislike RPE and the RIR system, I like to have the client focus on total volume done during a workout session and keep the same workout for, you know, 4 weeks or 8 weeks, however long our agreement is for. The problem I have with RPE is that most people tend to either overestimate themselves. Typically those are the guys, or underestimate themselves. And that's typically seems to be the females. Whereas on week one, you establish a baseline for yourself. Week two, you push yourself. I don't care if you add just 5 pounds to the total volume from week one, you're still doing better than you did last week, and just keep pushing it. And every single time I run a client on a program like that, they never reach a plateau in 8 weeks. It's always increasing volume through the whole thing.
There's an accumulation that goes into that for sure.
I use a very similar without even knowing it.
I think there's a lot of our spreadsheets that actually calculate the volume. I know, Terry, you still use volume calculation at the bottom of every spreadsheet?
Fuck yes, I do. So I love that.
Yeah, so here's it. Here it is. Like we do. I remember putting these in a few years ago for that exact point. And people will like the visual perspective. You know, they look to be able to see how much weight they pushed.
Mm-hmm.
I took mine out for a little bit. I put them back in. I've been back and forth on them. Depends on the person. Like, if it's someone's going to thrive off it, great. There's really no negatives to it. The only negative part about it is actually going. There's the one negative, and that's putting the formulas in for every exercise you put in, and then have to change the formulas on your cells. That's the only problem. Not a big deal. Not a huge deal, but
there's a negative for the client too.
And right, if you do like 4 extra reps on a reverse pec deck or something like that.
And this is something Zach and I ran into running our program this past 8 weeks.
Yep.
is we got so focused on chasing a number that our form broke down, and we were not eliciting the response we wanted to anymore. So we had to actually, you know, we were doing this specifically Yates rows, and we were doing like 315, 335, and they were ugly, and we were not feeling it in our lats at all.
Yeah.
So then the next week we dropped it down to 225 and smoked ourselves.
Yeah, movement quality is huge.
Alyssa's going to love that.
I had that happen. I had that happen yesterday. Yeah, I programmed an AMRAP on deadlifts, and I'd hit like two doubles, and because I'm slowly getting back into lifting heavy again, and I got to six, and it didn't feel heavy, but like seven was going to be ugly as shit. I knew it. Like seven was not going to be good. So I was like, that's it. But
once in a while, like having your form break down and using a lot of body English is not a bad thing.
Six wasn't exactly that pretty either.
This is where like I get like super, super jealous of you guys that have the availability to work in person, because when I'm assessing a client's form in RPE, I'm doing it via video, and I can zoom in and I can see a fair amount of things, but I feel like you don't get the subtle nuances like you do when you're in person.
The feeling of
So when you guys are working with, you know, your in-person clients versus your virtual clients, like how are you setting up your in-person versus your virtual observations?
Would you say there's carryover though from being an in-person trainer to then being online? So if you've taken an online person and went to videos, obviously that's a smooth transition. But I think the more experience you have as an in-person trainer, the more you can take away and bring to your online clients. Like the videos, for example, like I haven't had too many issues with people not reaching the RPE. I mean, after a few videos and after a few cues of hey, listen, just up the weight. And then in those circumstances, I'll even say, hey, you know, use this weight for your next week and see where you're at.
Yeah, yeah.
And then if it's still easy, we just keep bumping the weights up, give, and they find us a sweet spot. I was fortunate enough to have one of my online clients. I walk by doing rows or something like that in the gym. She's gonna listen to this. I know she is. And she was doing rows, and I just came over and I gave her like a 15-pound heavier dumbbell. We should switch these.
All the time.
Yep. Definitely done that before.
Yeah. And you know what? It works. But again, from the video perspective, I mean, Kev, I mean, what's the difference between what you see in videos and what you see in person?
Videos are kind of tough depending on the angle. Not everyone is knows about the tripod or sets up the best angle. So when I see in person, I'm really looking at range of motion in a video. Like I'm looking at range of motion. I'm like seeing, are you getting like a squat, for example, is the squat depth there? Once we're getting to the higher end of the rep range, are you kind of like letting off of it? Are you trusting yourself? Do you have a spotter? Stuff like that.
Velocity changes,
stuff like that. I mean, in person, it's just easy. Like the secret to success in the in-person training in terms of like breaking people and into the heavier workload is to be an asshole. Like I'll be like, oh, like we'll be like on the lat pull down, for example, and we'll be at like 70 or 60, and I'll be like, how was that? And they're like, that was medium. And I was like, okay. And I'll pull the pin and put it to 80, and then they do another set. I'm like, how was that? Yeah, that was getting tougher. Oh, okay. And I put it to 90. They think I'm ignoring them and I'm just like adding weight, but like in my mind it's like I know that they can do more if they just push themselves. So it's like
the dreaded one more. That term is never true.
One more. Oh no.
What? One more.
One more.
One more.
Yeah, like one more is a rolling quote. Is what it is.
Someone got me a pitch counter. Michelle Denard got me a pitch counter back in the day.
Oh yeah.
Because she said I couldn't count, and I was like, I just started counting when it looked like you were doing something.
I think like from my perspective, the biggest advantage to in-person observation is that you can have a 360 view. So with a video, obviously, you know, you're getting a side or a front or maybe a back view. If you're lucky, maybe they'll give you all three. But for in-person, the 360 view is super beneficial.
You could also pick up on like little nuances that the body does. I mean, the body wants to help to make anything easier. I mean, and like literally in training and as a trainer, you have to tell them to, you know, tell your body to shut up and just keep like everything stable, right? So like those cheater reps, for example, But like in person, you get to see those little nuances. Are they unconsciously cheating, or are they? Is this like the final set? I mean, you can obviously see it in some videos.
You reference lat pulldowns. Lat pulldowns, chronic. People start folding forward.
Yeah, for sure. Are they we mentioned it earlier. They get that pivot of the arm, or the hinge of the arm. They do like a tricep pushdown, which typically I'm game for, but not on a lat pulldown. but you see that stuff. You see if they're like utilizing leverage. I tell everybody, use every point of leverage you can, especially like in an isolation exercise. Yeah. Or like my lat pull down is isolation/compound type of thing, but not like a power movement.
I would even argue that like the person's level of experience plays into the type of video that you're going to get when you're online coaching. Sure. So yes, I'll pick on like Tom and Mike. When I watch your videos and you guys are picking up like 700 or 800 pounds, you guys make it look easy. So if I were guessing what your RPE is, I would not guess a 10 because you guys make it look pretty flawless. And then I have other people who struggle more, and they're like, this was an RPE 7 for me, and it was so struggly. It looks like an RPE 27. So I think, like, the level of experience plays into it, too.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you get an elite, like, I would call you guys absolutely elite athletes.
You're making a blush.
100%. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you guys know how to really manipulate your body in terms of, like, keeping everything stable, strict, you know, you have very good body control. I always like reference it to even like myself in bodybuilding on the show, on the stage, like you have to manipulate certain muscles at certain times, get really good at that. So when I come out and do an exercise, I can, you know, really isolate my rear delt just because I've had to do it. So the more experienced the athlete is in video, you're going to see like,
Just to be brutally honest, you're never going to reach the elite level in any gym discipline without learning your body.
And an
innate knowledge of yourself.
Yeah, I mean,
it's just impossible. Because at some point, your coach is not going to be able to tell you how to activate your rear lats. You need to be able to feel that yourself and know that it's happening.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. 100%.
It's a good point. It's so interesting, like the variation in clients. Some of them have so much bodily awareness, and then some of them do not, and everybody is different. So that's one cool thing.
I learned that because I'm working with my 7-year-old son, and body awareness is not there yet. So that's been an interesting thing. So, and it's one extreme to another. Obviously, I'm doing hands-on with him, but it's been able to see.
Well, he is 7.
Listen, there's no excuses, Terry. That's blood. That's my blood. Kid should be coming out doing deadlifts and back squats right out of the womb, but we're getting there. Yeah. So it's good. And he's got he's flat-footed. He's really tall, and he's got really long long limbs, but he's got it. It just takes time. And for that, that's a whole other topic.
I mean, coordination.
Kids training is a whole other topic.
Yeah. And coordination itself can be like a whole other topic.
But there's a lot of adults like that, too. I mean, think about that. Like growing up as kids and getting into, you know, older and becoming older. And there's still people that are very uncoordinated when it comes to their body and knowing their body in space, really. And to get them to do these movements, they're not natural movements.
No.
They're just not natural movements, right? So it takes time. It takes time. It takes encouragement from your coach and consistency.
I call it, I call it body stupid.
Like, body stupid.
You're just body stupid. Like, that's you're going to get better. You're going to get smarter. Like, your body's going to get smarter. And it's just about, like, do it. A perfect quote is, it's not, practice doesn't make perfect. Perfect practice makes perfect. Right. And cool. That's why a lot of, like, we say don't, you have to go into every rep like it's your one rep max. Yep. You know, you have to go in thinking it is like this is make or break, because that's going to train your body in terms of just making it better and reaching those higher RPEs in the future. Then you can throw drop sets, AMRAPs, all this good stuff at them, and they know how to control it and benefit from it.
It's good.
Crickets. I would love to know.
I think I have a cricket.
Is there a way... Like, when you post this podcast, is there a way for us to, like, elicit feedback somehow? Because I would love to know, after people listen to this, what questions they still have about how to push past the plateau. Like, I would love to hear what the outstanding questions are. Or if what we said, like Tom's point about, you know, knowing your body, like, that point may speak to a lot of people. Because I think there's probably a lot of people out there who don't have that self-awareness. So I'm just curious, like, if we could get feedback and find out what are the missing pieces. for our listeners?
I think the first step is admitting you actually don't know. You are body stupid. I don't think a lot of people are going to want to admit that, but it'd be nice to put it in there like after. So what we're going to do.
I was 100%.
Here, let me just wrap this up. I'm going to wrap this podcast up. Yeah, you guys have any more points you want to make? Terry, Scott, Kev, anybody?
No, I guess.
Yeah, we hit a lot of stuff.
Yeah, in the grand scheme, I mean, when we're talking about intermediate and advanced, there's a lot of different training techniques and different like modalities we can use to kind of like program them to hit that higher RPE. For beginners, this is where I'm going to contradict myself a little bit. In previous podcasts, I had said, like, we know when to call it and take a rest day, right? And that can get a little distorted, especially with beginners. But I tell everyone, I said it today to the kids that shadowing me, I said, you can have the best programming in the world, but if you don't show up, it doesn't mean anything.
Right.
So show up, come to the gym, make it a point to get here. And when you come in, make it a good workout. Like, that's it. Like, especially beginners. Like, if you got the programming, you just got to come and do it, and you got to push yourself. And like, yeah, that 7 RPE, it's a perfect RPE to be at. And then there's going to be a point where either it organically will increase, or we step in as coaches and make it increase.
Yeah, and it depends if they want to change that again.
Yeah,
someone else has 7 RPE and they're feeling good about themselves and they're content. Keep riding the 7 RPE because that can fight osteoporosis just as well as an 8 RPE.
Absolutely.
RPE. So there you go. That's your goal. Yeah. That's your goal. Broad range goals. Go ahead, Scott. What do you got, brother?
We're always harping on this RPE of 7. You have to remember that. People that may not have experience in the gym, their RPE of 7 could be a 10 to them. And it's the whole scale is based off of perception.
Right.
Yeah, so you have to, as a good coach, you have to be able to identify that is a 10 for them. And if you, anybody that's training in a gym, outside the gym, wherever you're training, if you think that you are training at a 10, you're probably not training at a 10 because you should never be at like the highest level. You should always be able to improve.
Yeah.
If you're running tens every set and every rep every week, I mean,
your 10 should be always. I think that's me. Your 10 should always be a goal, or maybe your scale is up to an 11, and your 11 should be that next step.
That'll be a good topic for another.
Well, it's nice to throw in tens every so often. Like I throw tens, but I throw it in for specific things. Like
I think we should do a whole podcast about RPE and RIR and
Training to failure. It's huge.
Yeah. Tom's going to say I hate RPE.
I'm not a huge supporter of RPE. I think it's like beneficial.
It's good if you know how to use it properly. But again, for prescribing it, I use it. I enjoy it. It works pretty good for my clients. But again, there's a process in coaching somebody how to use it properly.
I've even gone like you said, like if you do that total volume, you see like a 5 pound increase. I've told people like on individual exercises, even if you add 2.5 pounds, whatever, it's more than last week. And I mean,
right.
RPE, I think it's useful. I think it's a little flawed, though. Like we've seen that people can't assess their own RPE.
Yeah, like
very
anything
good.
Below an RPE 6 doesn't even exist, really.
Yeah, I mean, I told that to a client. I said I equate it to walking to the water fountain. Now, yes, like Scott said, it is subjective. So, like me walking to the water fountain or breathing, for example, it is probably a 1, right? But for somebody who's like who's got like a torn ACL, who's 400 pounds, that could absolutely be a 10 walking to the water fountain. So RPE is very subjective. And
giving someone a broad range of them just starting out, we talked about this right before the entire this podcast started, Tom, it was paralysis by analysis. You get a 7, you're like, was that a 7? Am I doing an 8? Is it an 8? Am I a 9?
Yeah.
And then rather than just giving somebody, hey, come with one within 1 to 2 reps of failure every set.
Yep.
How about that? Leave 1 or 2 in the tank.
Beginners, we've talked about 10.
Not sure. That's final set, or give them depending on how you structure your training. Mm-hmm. Your last set or your muscle of that given muscle group, try to take it to failure. If you have a spotter and it's safe.
I don't like AMRAPs for beginning clients, but for intermediate.
I'm talking about a few weeks into this or a few months into this, they're really trying to figure out where they're actually at in terms of failure.
I love AMRAP sets.
Oh, yeah.
I like to program them. I like to do them.
I love them.
There's a love-hate relationship.
I'm right there with you.
Matter of fact, like your fifth set that you were running for a while, and I think you still use it for people, fifth set is really, that's really nice to find out where you're going to be in progress.
AMRAP is very useful for judging a 1 rep max.
Yeah, and even your progressions, the way in which you're progressing each week, it's really useful. I like it.
In terms of my own personal programming, that's the one thing that's constant through every block of training that I do. Is there's AMRAPs in there somewhere. Because I think that's how you know what you're capable of, is pushing yourself until you just can't do anymore. So regardless of what I'm training, there's always somewhere sprinkled in that block, there's an AMRAP.
I always throw a bicep curl.
I still owe myself an AMRAP deadlift. Very upset with that.
Zach doesn't know this yet, but we're going to do an AMRAP drop set on leg press tonight.
Oh, yeah. That's good. No, that's fine.
I'm not going to stick around. Sure.
When you get those compound lifts.
Get the buckets out.
AMRAP drops. Oh, love those. Love those.
You guys all want to train legs after this?
No.
Yeah, I'm going to use my RP of one and walk tonight.
Like I said, I deadlifted yesterday, and
yeah,
it's been a long road.
Yeah, excuses.
I want to give you one last tip for trainers out there when we gauge RPE, yep. To transfer from in-person to online. So with in-person, there's a lot of things you can like get from the actual client, which would be like the look in their eyes. Masks are a big obstacle right now, but you can see the difference between someone's eyes wandering around, looking at other people working out, worried about other things in the area. Or you can see that glossy, I'm trapped under ice, and I can't breathe anymore. Please help me out. Look.
Yeah.
So there's a big difference there.
And that's where
they still make
Kevin's
noises.
Talking about being an asshole.
Yep. Like, so you can kind of gauge the RPE there. You can also gauge I interact with the clients the whole time while they're lifting and when they're done with their lifts. If they're laughing, giggling, having a conversation while you're lifting, you need to lift more weights. You can gauge it as a trainer. You need to teach that to them.
Yep.
If they're able to count. And if they tell you when the set's done, whether they don't remember how many reps they're on, that's when you start counting. If you don't remember, you get five more.
I say that.
So you have all these little things, subtle things. So to transfer any of those over into an online aspect, when your clients record a video, do not crop it right at the end of the lift. Have them put a little bit more and explain their lift to you. So now you can see the look in their eyes. You can get a little bit of their breathing in there at the end. So that's one thing that I found super helpful.
Yeah, that's very helpful.
So they tell you if their lift was good or bad, what you think their RPE was, anything that they want to tell you about the lift whatsoever. You know, like my setup wasn't the best, excuses or whatever. Or you can call them obstacles that you can help them adjust that they might not be thinking of.
Thank
you
for adding analysis. I like that.
Yo, that's huge. Yeah, can you imagine?
I'll do the not counting thing all the time. And with clients, I'll just not count. And they'll just be going. I'm like, what are you on? And they're like, I don't know. I'm like, well, if we're talking right now, or are you doing this hamstring curl? This is not a working set because this is the problem. So I'm like, you're gonna bump that up, and I just become an asshole. So it's okay.
I kind of use the criteria that we give people for list, miss, and hit, right?
Yeah, yeah.
If you can have a conversation, you're in list. If you're like intermittently talking and some heavy breathing, that's a miss. Yep. If you can't have a conversation, now you're in hit.
Welcome to hit.
Yeah,
no, for sure. It's super helpful tip.
Easy, medium, hard.
Yeah.
Oh, I really like that.
Yep.
I told you I'm going to learn something, add something every time I have a podcast with a big group of people. You just wait to the end Scott. That's all. Dropping bombs at the end.
Like, my last parting message to people would be, your body isn't going to go where your mind can't push it. So if there's something about working at higher RPEs that is unappealing to you for whatever reasons, I would do the work there and figure out, what are those self-limiting beliefs or whatever the case may be that's preventing you from going there mentally.
Thanks for listening, guys. Our next podcast is going to be coming up here. We'll announce it. If you guys have any questions for us directly, feel free to reach out to us on our Instagram pages. We'll list them in the link in the podcast on the Instagram page or the Facebook page. So we look forward to hearing you guys.